Welcome to the Human Experience Podcast, where we have folks of all different walks of life share their trials and tribulations, ideas, cerebral chatter, and experiences. We seek to open minds, shed light, and make our modern world feel a little less lonely, realizing that we are all connected, one human experience at a time. I'm your host, Aisha Billy. I would like to thank you for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy.
Hello, Allie.
Hi, Aisha.
After all this time.
After all this time, baby.
How are you?
I feel like I can confidently say that I am doing pretty well.
Fuck yeah.
That might be the first time I've ever actually felt that.
That's wild. Do you hear that, people? It takes time.
Yeah, 30 years, baby.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I feel like 30 is a magic number.
I've been feeling like that recently, too. I was like, I am fine wine, baby. I am just aging to my prime. But in all seriousness, no, like, it definitely, I think you get a lot of your lessons out in your younger years, for sure.
I think 20s are your true teenage years.
I think so, too. I honestly felt like, in the grand scheme of things, I didn't go super crazy in college. I had my, like, party stage at, like, 24 or 25.
I did have my parties phase in, like, college, but I feel like I didn't understand the atrocities of this world until, like, 25.
Yeah, because I think that's when you're like, all right, I have a year, and then I'm kicked off my parents' insurance, and then I have to see how I'm going to navigate life after being in school, and how do I get a job, and then you start getting this urge to, you know, make your relationships more serious all of a sudden, and nobody wants to be that way, and it's just, everyone's just lost in life, too. I think it's a big, like, change period as well.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I definitely have had, I feel like I've had an expedited learning curve with, like, moving across the country.
I can only imagine.
That, like, propelled me to kind of have all those learning experiences, like, really, really fast in such a short amount of time. I didn't know if I was going to be able to, like, hold on. It was a lot.
I think, too, like, when you start venturing out of your hometown and home state, then you see, you almost get culture shocked in a way, because you see how differently other people live and the different kinds of personalities that are, you know, dedicated to each region. And I feel like that was the most number one thing. I mean, you've traveled so much, so I know you can probably agree that, like, just being in different places opens your eyes and makes you realize a lot of things about, like, where you're from, like, once you're out of that situation.
Yeah, big time. Speaking of, are you back home now? Because I know you're just doing contract on the West Coast.
I was just in Arizona, yes, for 4 months. And now I'm back in New York for a month, and then I'm heading out west again to Colorado for the summer.
Yes. Are you allowed to talk about what you're doing?
Totally, yeah. I'm working at Pagosa Springs Center for the Arts, which I have worked there in the past as well, on and off since, like, 2019. And they're just amazing folks who produce really great theater, and I'm always happy to just work for them because they're just, honestly, at this point, like, a second family, especially since, you know, everything I went through last summer. I was out there when everything kind of went down, and they were just super duper supportive. And I honestly can't thank them enough for just all the opportunities and just all the love, honestly, really. It's so rare that you get to do theater for a community that just really loves the actors as people first and performers as well. But, you know, I'm excited to see them all again, for sure.
Isn't being an artist so, how do I put this? Like, amazing in the sense that you literally develop family everywhere in the world.
It's the most insane thing. And trying to explain that to people sometimes is really, you sound so crazy because you're like, I just met these people a month ago, but they're like my best friends now. And I think like, well, artists are just naturally more welcoming and are so willing to have like this discourse of a connection. You know what I mean? And it's just one of those things too, when you're in the situation and you're stripping down those walls and you're becoming super vulnerable and like having to just really break the ice. Like the first day you meet someone, you're like, hi, we're going to be in love for the next 5 months. Mm-hmm. Like, you know?
Yep.
So it's just one of those things where it does breed like really special connections. And then it's kind of crazy because people become your life and then it's just over. And you're over. Just like, what happened? And then you go back to your normal life and you're like, was I even there? Like, that's kind of how I feel now. I've been home for like a week ago yesterday. And I'm like, I even there? I was there for 4 months. Like, I was.
Oh, good thing we're talking, because I feel like it always helps to process that. Like what you just said. You're completely spot on. I was shooting like a short. I think this was September of last year. And we were together for like a week, but like the whole time, that entire week, that's what people don't understand. It's so bonding. Like, let's say you have a best friend, right? Maybe you guys go and get coffee like once a week for a couple hours. When you're on set or if you're working in a theater, you're with these people for several hours and you're going into like the depths of crevices of your mind, your feelings, you're sharing stuff. Anyway, at the ending of it, like the last day, one of the actors was like, it's just funny because after he said it, he was like, wow, that was really depressing. I wish I didn't say it. He was like, man, this was all so great. Like, I feel like we're all family. And then I'm never going to see you guys again.
It's so true.
And he was like, oh, sorry.
But you know what it is, though? It is like a family, but it's like when you do see each other, and you will, because we know this industry is so weird and magical and crazy in that way.
Yes.
It's amazing. And it's like no time has passed. So I feel like, honestly, I would not change it for a thing, as hard as it freaking is sometimes. It's just the most wonderful thing about being an actor and a musician and an artist is the people, 100%, because collaboration is everything too. So it's like, you know, I feel like we know that from each other, but I think like also just, you know, the chance to work with other talented minds is a gift that is just literally irreplaceable.
Yeah. I have the chills as you say that, because it's, how do I put this in a couple sentences? My whole life, I've really struggled just like with existing, trying to understand where in the world I fit, realizing I don't fit, but then finding other misfits, but we don't fit together, but we kind of do really well at the same time. It's like this whole mishmash. And I finally feel like I found my groove within like filmmaking. And my favorite part is collaborating. And all I've ever wanted to, even in New York, was to work with my friends ultimately. Yeah. Like, yes, I would maybe love big companies, but I've worked for big companies here and I didn't really like it. Like, I'm more of an independent filmmaker at heart, and working with my friends, it's just like one of my biggest life purposes.
Yeah.
And just, I don't have the words for the magic of that collaboration. I guess it's like the meshing of two souls in a way. It's not marriage, it's not sex, but it's still an intertangle.
It's a union. Like, I feel like a union between like your, I think, especially when you do work with people that you consider to be your friends outside of an artistic setting. Cause let's like, you know, let's call a spade a spade. Like, there are people that, you know, you work with where you're like, we're getting paid to work with one another, you know, like we're strictly kind of just coworkers, and like, of course we collaborate, but it's not always this like magical union that happens. But I think when you get the opportunity to create art with your friends, it's almost like these people know like what you've been through as a human as well. Whereas like, you know, sometimes you show up to set and yes, you do share things, you do make really fast connections and become super vulnerable. But it's like when you're working with people who you have a rapport with outside of like an artistic setting, that is another level, because they're like, I am now seeing the way this person's brain and this way that this person's gears are turning. And I understand why. And it makes me rise to the occasion, because now we both are working towards something, not only artistically, but like as humans.
It's deeper. And it's when you said union, that's a beautiful word and world. It's solidarity.
Right. Yeah.
And it's standing in. Or I think it's solid. No, it's solidarity. It's standing in union for something that, like a shared vision. And anytime we have come across these like staple groundbreaking pieces of art, it's because everyone in that cast and crew were on the same page about it.
Yeah.
There wasn't like an internal conflict. Like as funny as it sounds, I was watching like season one of SpongeBob and I'm like, this is fucking brilliant. Like the writing is so fucking good. I was hanging out with my friend watching it, who's a talent manager, and she was saying how the writing is like, it's just so unmatched. And I was thinking the animators, the writers, the voiceover actors, they all had to be on the same page about the shared vision.
I think
like if anybody was against anything in any way, we would have felt it as an audience.
I think too, like, I don't know, every great independent project I've ever done that's like, even in its like, you know, beginning stages, you go to your friends and you go to people that like get you artistically and you're like, is this good? And they're like, that's good. And then you're like, but you should do this too. Like, I feel like that is like the beauty of collaboration, is like literally throwing in an idea and then everyone has to be excited about this idea to get it to work. Or they have to be able to like offer something to the idea that's like, hey, this isn't working, but try this. And you're like, oh yeah, duh. Like, why didn't I think of that? But it's almost like, yeah, it's so crazy. And I think to me, like all my independent projects that have, you know, people are like, oh, you did this thing. I was like, well, I didn't do it by myself. Like I had the idea or I wrote the song, but these people made it happen, you know, like,
yeah, so totally.
It's such a good, I think that's such a good example too. Cause it's something that's so like out there and like, for lack of a better word, like stupid, but it's brilliant. You know,
it's brilliant beyond belief.
And look what it's become.
It's a insane phenomenon. Like it's a national phenomenon. Cause like cousins and know what it is. Like I remember last time I was 8 years ago and they were telling me that they watch it too. And I was like, holy shit. And then, you know, I've like been down the rabbit hole with it lately. And if you go on YouTube, like every episode is dubbed in any language you could fucking think about. And I don't know, dude, I'm like really blown away by the writing. Like even just season one alone, it's just so fucking brilliant. Anyway, I'm getting off the SpongeBob tangent.
On SpongeBob, ironically.
What's
it's
that?
On SpongeBob, ironically. If there's anything so on brand about doing an episode with me, it's that we get on tangents about SpongeBob.
So we need to take a trip down memory lane / go into time capsule for a second.
Jesus.
The last time we recorded was, what was it, 2020?
I think it was the very beginning of 2021. But it, or, wow, or the very end of 2020. It was like either like December or November of 2020 or like January of 2021, I think.
Dude.
Like, and honestly,
how much of our lives changed?
It's crazy because it's not, doesn't sound like it was that long ago. You know what I mean? I still think like 2020 was like last year. I don't know if you also feel that way. It's weird because it's like, it feels like forever ago, but it also feels like, oh my God, we just literally came out of COVID, and people are like, it's been 3 years. Yeah. And you're like, what? So at least that's how I feel. I don't know about anyone else. My life is complete freaking 180. Like, I can't even really fathom the amount of shit that happened and went down. But here we are.
Did you on the other side. Lose your father in that time?
I lost my dad June 29th, 2022. So it's coming up on a year, yeah. Which also feels like the blink of an eye.
Wow. Yeah. Fuck. Speaking of art, it's like when you sent me the song, like it hit me that much harder because I knew the depth behind it. I was just thinking that to like what you said earlier today, like about knowing the artists and knowing the things that they've went through. It just, it hit so differently. Cause like when I listened to that song, like I fucking cried. Yeah.
It's like that song too is something I've been on a journey with that. That song has been in my heart for like a long time because which I'm sure we'll, you know, get into the specifics, but for the layman's version of this is that I went through a horrible breakup. I was sick of writing love songs. I was like, I want to write a song about my family. And I started watching like TED Talks and stuff on like generational trauma, ironically, like not unrelated. Like I was watching this one talk about how generational trauma like affects us and how a lot of the times like even habits or things that like our ancestors did like travel down like the generational line. And it was really, I found it super interesting. And I was like, that's a really interesting concept. I wonder in what ways like my family has affected my life. Cause I have a very, you know, there's been a lot of things in my family, even just little like synchronicities where I'm like, oh, so the song was initially very different. And I played it for I remember playing it for my dad. It was one of the last things I played for my dad before. Like the last time I saw my dad was like a year ago around this time before I left for the summer. I was like going out to Colorado for a gig and I played that song for him and it was like in the beginning stages and I was like, what do you think of this? And he was like, that's really cool. I like the concept. Like he was like really like into it. And then I kind of put it away. I was busy. Everything went down with my dad, which, you know, I'm okay with getting into that if that's where this goes. But yeah, like everything went down. I was flying home I found out my dad was going into kidney failure. And the doctors were kind of like, they were all like, he was seeing a bunch of different doctors in the hospital. And like, they were all, some of them were like, doesn't look good. And then some of them were like, oh, we just need to stabilize his kidneys and he'll be fine. Like, so it was very like ambiguous, but I knew like regardless he was very ill and I didn't know what was going to happen. So I wound up finding that out while I was, ironically, you're going to scream, in tech rehearsals for SpongeBob, the musical. Can't make this shit up. So I was playing, for all those out there wondering who I was playing, whoever I could be playing in SpongeBob, I was Karen the computer. So ironically, I know. So anyway, that being said, there's nothing like pretending to be a freaking computer that's married to plankton and then finding out your dad's going to kidney failure. It's like, this is like what they don't talk about as an artist. You're like, I'm literally dressed as a robot right now and I have to book a flight in the green room. So yeah, which, you know, we can get into that because it's definitely, it was a crazy, super crazy experience. But essentially I wound up writing this song. I was like really anxious because I didn't know what was going to happen, obviously. And I wound up having to take like 4 planes back to New York. And it was this whole like thing, very last minute. And then I wrote that song. I finished it. I don't know. I was like, didn't have I literally didn't even have a bag with me. I just like got on an airplane, like in my rehearsal clothes. Mm-hmm. And I like was on my phone and I wrote this. I finished the song on the airplane, like home. And then my dad wound up passing. And I like was thinking about the song a lot when I was like home for like all the events that transpired after that. And I was like, really, I go back to Colorado, like, you know, we have the services and everything. And like, I go back to Colorado and I finish out. I'm like, all right, well, I'm just going to finish out my contract. I was home for like a week. And then we have this gala in Pagosa every year, which is a Broadway gala. So there's different acts and they auction off things to raise money for the theater and whatnot. And the artistic director was like, hey, I would love for you to play like two songs on your guitar, like for like a little set during the gala performance. And I was like, totally. Like, do you care if I do an original? So then I felt like very like inclined to do that song, and it was really super well received. And it just kind of grew from there. I performed it, like I did a solo gig in October and I performed it there, and it was really well received. And then I recently just performed it live again when I was in Arizona, and it was super well received. And that's kind of how I started working with my friend Brody, who is producing the single for my song that we've been talking about. It's called Family Tree. And essentially he was like, you should come down to my studio, just like check it out, like lay down some tracks. And I was like, yeah, like let's do it. So it was very spontaneous. I like went by his studio and in his house, and he has a great setup. And, you know, we're just talking, and it was so funny because a lot of the girls that I was living with, they're like, we're going to go to this heels class. So I was like, I think I'm going to like stay here and like record some stuff maybe with Brody. Like, so then we started just like playing around, and I was like, he's like, do you have any like songs you want to like put down? And I was like, well, I have this one song. And I played a song. He's like, oh, that's really good. And then I was like, you know, I have this other song too that like, you know, I feel like would be really interesting to be like fully realized, but like, I'm not really sure where I want to go with it. And I played it for him, and he's like, that's the one, like this needs to go down. So then that's kind of how we started doing it. And we recorded like a guitar and vocal in like maybe like an hour or two. And like, it's crazy because the take, like we did a take where I was just like playing the guitar and singing. And I'm such like a singer songwriter in the sense that like I'm so, and I think I come from a background of live performance so much that I was like, I don't know, Brody, like this is feeling like it's feeling very rigid to me. Like I want it to feel like this natural flow. And he was like, try singing and playing at the same time. So then we did, like, we kind of broke that, like, I mean, I know every artist does it kind of differently, but like, I know a lot of people will like lay down a guitar track and then record a vocal and like whatever. But I was like, wanted to record the guitar and the vocal at the same time. And it was just like serendipitous, and it worked out. So now he sent me the final, well, not the final, but he sent me one of the final mixes this morning, or last night rather. And I just listened to it this morning, and I'm really excited about it. So,
God, firstly, I want to say I'm really sorry about the loss of your father. And like when you were talking about it, I was getting like my eyes were welling up because it really is. I don't have the words for it. Lately, I've been thinking more in like symbols and pictures, but it's like the circle of life that is inevitable, obviously, but still that we all know is coming at one point or another, but it's still so tough. There's no preparation for something like that. And I want to open up a little bit with my dad. He has had like a declining health since like 2019. And, you know, it's been like up and then back down again and stuff. He's diabetic and he has like a foot condition now. So it's been like really tough. Like I've had a fear of him passing steadily, I would say, since 2019. And it's just like not a way to live, you know, like when I'm in the height of that anxiety, like you were talking about it, the anxiety you had in the green room of just like that high spike. it's like if I get a phone call, I'm like, is this one it? Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. And it really sucks. And like 2019 is a lot, or I guess 2018, it's been like the past 4 or 5 years. Anyway, I'm coping with that like pretty well now. But yeah, like grief is so...
There's something to be said about like anticipatory grief too. Like, cause I felt that a lot with my dad because my dad had cancer. So my dad was diagnosed with bladder cancer in 2018. And, you know, went through the whole chemo radiation thing when he was first diagnosed. And then, you know, got a couple surgeries. And ultimately, like he was a smoker. So that's like, I think the second, besides lung cancer, is like one of the highest causes of like bladder cancer from like smoking is one of the causes, one of the effects of smoking is getting that kind of cancer. So, and he had a great oncology team and like, you know, he was doing well. So I think for me, that's kind of what threw me where it was like, you know, my dad had been, you know, struggling with it since like 2018 when he was diagnosed. But then ultimately, like, you know, when I left in the spring, he had gotten a scan done and there was a grim prognosis for him in the fall of 2021 where they were like, this is probably never going to go away. And now he had a spot like in that he went and got a scan done and they found that he had had a spot on his liver and his lung. So it was starting to become metastatic. So they were kind of like in the best case scenario, like you could have like 5 or 10 years. So that was like grim. But the doctor was kind of like, that's what we have to tell people because, you know, that's like what the average lifespan is. And then, but it could be anywhere. Cause he's like, we've told that to people and then they've been fine. So, you know, he was, like, it was grim. There was a lot of, like, you know, my parents, like, obviously my mom went with him to, like, every appointment. And, like, you know, my parents, like, we all sat down and, like, talked about it. And obviously it was very upsetting. And my dad was never really, like, upset for himself. But he was more like, well, I just want to make sure, like, the two of you are okay. Like, my mom and I. I'm an only child, too, so... I'm very close with my parents. And pretty much like after that, he had gotten he had been going for like a second round of like chemo radiation and all that stuff. And then he wound up going for a scan in the spring. And like the doctor was like, you don't even have to worry anymore. Like all of your tumors have shrunk over 50% in size. Like they're so small. They're like immeasurable now. So he was like, you can just relax. And like, I remember like, there was like, we all had this like, oh, like, and that was spring of 2021. So he was doing like, I thought he was doing really well unless there was something he wasn't telling me, which I have no idea. My dad also was the kind of person that like, he never wanted to worry anyone. So that could really be like a factor as well, but there's something to be said about anticipatory grief because I felt so much of that. Like when he had gotten that like really negative scan, I was like really, really upset. And then I kind of was like, I'm not super worried. Like, he's fine. Like, he always, like, even when he was really sick, he would, like, bounce back and, like, be better than ever. And, like, my dad also, like, would go through the chemo and radiation stuff. And, like, some people get so knocked out by that. He would be, like, mowing the lawn and, like, fixing things and, like, going out. And, yeah. So it was just very, like, deceiving to me. So when like, you know, my mom was like, oh, he's going to kidney failure. I had a feeling that I was like, this is not good. Like, you know, just the way everyone was talking. And my mom's like, I'll let you know if you're at a place where you need to come home. But I think you should stay right now. And my dad was very adamant about me going to Colorado and was very adamant about me staying. So to this day, I still wonder if he knew, because I feel like he knew that he was going to die. And I feel like he knew that like he couldn't do it if I was there. And that's also really hard.
Oh my God.
Cause it's just like, I, you know, so when my mom called me, I found out and I was like sobbing on the couch in the green room and my two angel friends who I need to shout out, Trevor and Sam, who are two of my castmates, and they become two of my good friends that I've worked with in Colorado. These two people were with me like when I was like finding out that my dad essentially was going to die. And I literally like looked at my friend Sam and I was like, is my dad going to die? And she's like, Allie, he's going to die.
Wow.
And I know that was like so hard for her to say, but like I needed to hear it. Cause it's like, as an artist too, you feel like, but I have this duty, like this job that I like took on. And like, even like, I mean, you know, Stella Adler, they make you like review that actor's code of ethics. Like, you know, I will be like essentially like committed to my art no matter what. And I felt like I was like, I'm letting everyone down. Like I let my family down by being here and I've let my cast down by being there. And it's like, I felt just this sense of like, did I make the right decision by coming here? Like, and so it was like all those feelings at once. I book a flight. I get on the flight. I had to take 4 planes to get back to New York. My dad was like still alive. And then I found out that, I had a layover in Vegas. I like talked to my mom on the phone. She was like, yeah, he's like, you know, he's still hanging on. But she saw him that day and he was kind of lethargic, like in the hospital. And essentially what was happening was his tumors had gotten to a size where they emit these like gases that cause the organs to shut down. So all of his organs were shutting down as a complication of like the cancer. So from having a scan where everything was like really small, they did a scan when he was in the hospital and he wound up being in the hospital for something unrelated and then just kind of like was declining like in the hospital. It was very just odd timing. And then he wound up getting a scan done and they said like he like lit up like a Christmas tree like all over. So it was just one of those things where they were like, if we can stabilize the kidneys, we can get him treatment and like see what happens. And my mom and I were nervous that he was gonna have to go on hospice, which would not have been, I think would have been like worse almost in some ways for everyone involved. And like then I landed at JFK and I called my mom. It's like 6 in the morning. I had like not slept for like 20 hours. And then she was like, yeah, he died last night. I couldn't tell you because like, I didn't want you to like freak out on the airplane. And I'm glad that she didn't, because I don't know, that would have been like the weirdest experience. But I like knew, like it was really weird. Like I knew that he died like when he did, because I was on the airplane and I felt like the window was like cracked and like all this light just like shone through the window. And I like had this feeling that he was just like on the other side. And then I like went into JFK and like called my mom and she was like, yeah, he died last night. Like, you know, and they called my mom at like midnight that night and was like, you know, he's probably going to pass like any minute. So you need to like come, if you want to be here, like come down. So my mom drove like, I think the hospital was like 15 minutes away. And like at that hour, it's like so quick. And then he had like passed like 2 or 3 minutes before she got there. So it was like, I think my dad went on his own terms. And like, you know, I wound up seeing like, believe what you will, people, I saw a medium like a couple of months after that experience. And like, she said, like, you know, that was like how he wanted to go. So I do believe that, like, I believe that my dad never wanted to burden anyone. But it's hard, because I think the thing that I struggle with the most too is like, you don't own this part of yourself. Like, you don't own grief. Like, it's just something that is happening to you, but you don't identify with it. Like in a weird way where you're like, I'm like, I don't feel like I'm like the girl whose dad died. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's not, it's like you have this version of your life before and then you have a version of your life after. And it's like the craziest part of this, and I meant to say this before, is like, you know, obviously the circle of life, death and all that. There's my dad's funeral was like the best and worst day of my life, because it was like, I didn't know how I was going to feel too, because I hadn't seen my dad. And, you know, I wrote this post too, on the 6-month anniversary, like that my dad was, deceased, like that my dad was really weird with me at the airport. He was very like, he was not like feeling great that day when I was like leaving for Colorado. And he was like, I'm going to drive you to the airport. And I was like, I can take an Uber. I can get so-and-so to drive me. It's like not a big deal. And he was like, no, I want to take you. Like he was like so adamant and he was so emotional when he dropped me off. So I feel like he knew that he wasn't going to make it then. And I didn't realize that because I was like, I'm going to see you in like 2 months, like relax, like, you know, and it was just, that was the last time I saw my dad in person was when he dropped me off at the airport. So it was really weird because I flew out of LaGuardia to go to Arizona, but I flew back into JFK and I hadn't been in JFK since like I talked to my mom on the phone that day. And I just like the first thing, like my mom was like, he passed. And I was like, he was the fucking best, dude. Like, wasn't he just the best? Like, and that was like the one thing I can confidently say about my dad is that like, he was the best. Like, you know what I mean? So it's like, you forget, like, you almost like have to like grieve the pain. And like, right now I grieve a lot of like, he won't be here to see me do X, Y, and Z. Like my dad would have found it so cool that I was like finally releasing a song, like finally. And I know there were so many things that like, there's a lot of layers to like why I've waited a long time to like have a release. Cause I've been writing, I think people have known I've been writing songs like forever, basically my whole life, like, you know, and I feel like it's finally like the right time and the right song. And, you know, I'm happy to like honor my dad with that because it's just, it never goes away, but I'm in the part of grief where I have more space for it and I can talk about it. And I think it's important because it's so taboo. And like, what we don't realize is this is something that is gonna, if we are lucky to love in this lifetime, we'll all go through this. You know?
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
I feel so lucky that he was my dad at the end of the day. And like his funeral was a beautiful testament to his life. I gave his eulogy and I played the song. I didn't play it because I was like, I don't think I can get through that. But I played, I was like, you know, at the end of his eulogy, I was like, my dad and I's song was Father and Daughter by Paul Simon. So I played that song at the funeral and, you know, I think people saw my dad the way I saw him through my eyes. Like they saw exactly what the sentiment of family tree is, where it's like, there's all these things about our families that we don't know. There's facets of their personality that we just don't know. Like, I don't know what my dad was like when he was like 23, you know what I mean?
For sure.
And
he had a whole life before you.
So it's like, I know my dad as my dad, but like he was an artist. He was, you know, he was very soft spoken. He was very observant. He's very gentle and calm and, you know, like very stubborn. So I can only imagine like, you know, the parts of him, but it was interesting. Like when I was going through his photos, I was like, wow, I found out shit I never knew about him. I found letters he wrote to my mom when they were like young. And I was like, oh my God, this is what my dad was like in love. This is what my dad was like before he had kids. And like when they were just like enjoying their like life together. So it's just, that's what I want people to take away from this song is that like, of course there's like a backstory and there's so much pain and grief like that I poured into it, but it's also like, if it does one thing, I want people to just like, you know, understand like our parents in a different way. Like, because I think that's the way you like truly forgive like your childhood trauma too, is like understanding that like your parents, you know, are people and are humans who are flawed. And, you know, we put them on a pedestal because they're our family. And it's just that like, you know, all these things that happen to us are the reason that we are.
Yeah. There are these like all-knowing protectors when we're young. And then we go through seeing them as people. I remember one of my childhood like best friends from back Long Island, she was texting me. She was like, I just watched my parents' marriage video and I cried. She was like, they were my age in that video that I am now. And it's so, there's this different type of humbling and tenderness of the heart that we experience when we come across those letters that, like, your dad wrote to your mom, or we come across that, you know, wedding videotape, or you see how they were when they were you, like, your age. And it's just so, it's so moving.
I think too, like, I've really struggled and thought about, like, legacy a lot, and, like, what kind of, like, you know, it doesn't fucking matter, like, which has been really helpful to me as an actor, because I'm like, you know, everyone's like, oh, like, how do I make it? And you feel, like, tortured, and you feel very, like, comparative to everyone. And, like, even, like, doing my most recent contract, like, you know, people being like, oh, I missed my entrance, or my costume, like, wasn't, like, right. Or I'm like, none of this shit fucking matters. None of this fucking matters. It's like, no one's going to remember that. No one's going to remember this shit about you.
Yeah.
No one's going to care. But, like, what are you doing for the world that you can leave behind? Like, you know, and my dad left behind goodness, and I don't think anyone had a bad thing to say about him. And if they, like, if they did, I've never heard it. So it's kind of like, at the end of the day, like, I feel like what, so I thought about it to myself, I was like, what are the things you want to leave behind? And I just, like, was like, you know, what's more important to me is, like, sharing my voice and, like, putting myself out there, because I don't want to die and not have my authentic self fully be in the world.
Yeah, it's like this speech I saw by Denzel Washington. He was like, the worst thing that you can experience at your deathbed is all of the ghosts of who you wanted to be circling you, who didn't get to be fully realized or expressed in this life.
Right.
And that really resonated with me, because, you know, I struggle with fear a lot. And I know that, like, I feel like people back home, like, even when I was backpacking Thailand, I was getting all these DMs like, you're so fearless, you're so fearless. And I'm like, I'm not fearless. I am brave as fuck, and I will own that. But it's not this fearlessness. I struggle with fear almost daily. And it, for a long time, arguably still now, but a lot less now, it's kept me from putting out my art. Because it's like, you know, it's exposing, like, your deepest insides, and you have the risk of it, like, not landing well in rejection. But when I zoomed out and I was like, will I be okay on my deathbed, or however, you know, I pass, having all those ghosts of, like, that movie I wanted to make, that dance I wanted to put together, that thing I wanted to write, circling me, like, the level of regret that I would experience, it actually does surpass the fear, which is wild to say, because the fear is huge, but clearly that need for expression is bigger. Obviously, it's a process. It takes time for you to get to, like, a point where you feel, I don't want to say ready, but, like, willing to put it out there.
Right.
But yeah, it's like, it's not worth it. It's not worth not sharing it at the end of the day.
No. And I think, like, the thing that's hard is, like, and I think the challenge that I found is, like, you know, it's not a matter of wanting to. It's about, like, I think, you know, it's just hard to have, like, certain resources too. So it's like, I loved, you know, when we were chatting about, like, potential collaboration plans, you know, stretching a dollar, you know, yeah, to be continued. Like, you know, stretching a dollar to, like, make the most out of, like, doing stuff. Cause I think that's, like, I think something that a lot of people are like, well, I don't have the money, or I think, like, I'm not at this level, or I don't have time. And I'm like, fuck all that. You do. So, I don't know. I'm just trying to, like, I feel more fearless than ever in that. Cause I'm like, after this damn year, between, like, experiencing, like, really just horrible, intense heartbreak and the death of my dad, I was like, no one can touch me. And it was one of those things where I was like, I really could. I had some really dark months. Like, and even it's funny to, like, even listen to our first episode where I'm like preaching all these things. And obviously I did mean everything that I said in that episode. Like, there was so much relevant, amazing things that we touched on. That was, like, really a beautiful conversation. However, like, I just remember, like, how I truly was feeling, like, on the inside during that time. And I just really am so astounded by my growth. Because I just was like, you know, it's very rare that we're like, you know, you don't see what's gonna be on the other side. And like, now I'm like really on the other side of those feelings. And I think like, because of this year, I feel like I can actually like just really appreciate life, be in the moment, make time for things, not get as like bent out of shape about like certain things, know my fucking worth, like as an artist and a person and a partner and all that, and really just live the life that I always like hoped that I'd be living. And like, I'm still figuring it.
Absolutely.
Still figuring it out, like not anywhere close to where I want to be, but I'm okay with taking the journey now.
We can't skip it. No. That's the thing too. Like, there are tools that you inherently have to acquire in the process so that you don't fall apart at the destination. You know what I mean?
And I think too, like, you can't choose your, I feel like, you know, I always feel like I have a destiny to fulfill. I've always felt that feeling of like, I know I'm supposed to do something that's great and important, but I don't know what it is. And I don't know at what capacity, and I don't know like what that's going to look like, but I know I'm on my way. And I kind of, the way I'm approaching things now, especially like rejection and the arts and stuff, I'm kind of like, well, it's not my journey, because everything that has said yes to me has been so serendipitous and so perfect and has made so much sense. Everything that has said yes. That's like, you know, it's just, you can't.
I literally have been viewing rejection now as protection. Like, I know they say rejection's redirection, which yes, I have been viewing it through the lens of it actually being protection. And not with just art, even like if there's like a therapist that I'm dying to work with and like there's insurance issues or like, you know what I mean? Like other shit like that. I'm like, okay, instead of me creating this whole fantasy that like my life would have been better if I had that, if only, I'm thinking, you know what? I think that clearly working with that person wasn't for my greatest good in this time. And I'm going to view this as protection, and it's only going to get me closer to what I want or need or whatever. And there's, I just remembered, I thought of this the other day too, because I've been experiencing a fair amount of rejection because I've been putting a lot more stuff out there, like definitely acceptance too, but like more rejection, like the quantity has just gone up. And there was this video of like a CEO or whatever, and he was like, if only we can think of the no's as being one step closer. Like if I told you you had 500 no's between you and like the thing that you really wanted, each no, you'd actually get more excited. It's like, you're down another one, you're down another one, you're closer, you're closer, you're closer. Brilliant fucking mindset, because it's also true. It's totally
so funny, because I was going to express that sentiment and you just did it like absolutely flawlessly. And I was going to say, every no is one step closer to you actually being where you're supposed to be. Like, so I'm trying to view it like that. And of course, you know, we have days where we're like, ugh, like, when is it my turn? But it will be. And
it will be. That's a thing. And I was thinking about this too. There's so much I want to say. Patience is actually super helpful. There have been so many instances in this year. I don't know what it's been for me with this year. I think like, because in 2022, I had loss as well. I had like moved across the country. I moved in 21, but you know, that whole first year is like super hard. It's like this learning curve. You don't know the lay of the land. You don't know how to make money here. Like everything's different. It really is than New York. Like I didn't think it would be. I was super naive. It is. And it just takes time to learn the lay of the land. So I have this different lens now where I am like stepping out of my own way. I'm done white knuckling. And it's given me more of a bird's eye view. And there were several instances where I wanted justice to come for a specific situation, and it wasn't coming right away, right? And I just was like, this is so fucking stupid. Like, I don't give a fuck anymore, yada, yada, spinning myself. And then like a month later, the thing, the justice came through. The truth surfaced for all to see. I got X, Y, and Z, like insert whatever here. All I needed was a little bit of patience just to wait out the journey, the experience. But because I didn't have patience, I was so head first, diving in, hot and whatever, coming in hot. It was like I was wrecking myself. And that's when it hit me, where it was like, if things don't seem like they're coming together right away, blah, blah, blah is not coming through right away, just wait a little. Just wait. So that was like a huge lesson for me. And another lesson, I don't know why I feel called to talk about this. I think you said something. Where I'm at with like friends and friendship and like me understanding what I actually need out of them and my value as a friend. I think there were certain behaviors that I wasn't tolerating, and it made me come at a crossroads where I was like, do I continue this or do I stop? And for some instances I stopped, and some of those friends actually came back around after like a lot of time, apologizing, saying like, I didn't realize how much of a good friend you were, yada yada. And I felt so validated because it made me realize like, I'm an overgiver. I'm like a recovering overgiver. And that's something that I'm learning. Another thing I'm learning how to gauge. Like if you're a giver, learn when to stop, because takers don't know.
Oh, no. They will drain you. I've had so much. Yeah.
Dry. That's like another thing I learned. Like I have a generosity tick. I don't know if it's like the European or like the Turkish culture, the New York like gang mentality, but like my loyalty is down to the bone. And I was just giving out this like generosity or, you know, loyalty. Like it was fucking free cheese from the government. And I realized like, oh, reciprocal friendships. That's a thing.
Yeah.
That is like a huge thing I also learned this year. And it's gotten me to stop chasing. And I'm not saying like I'm not batting anyone. Like everybody has their right to pursue the friendships and relationships that they want in this life. That being said, I also have the right to pursue reciprocal ones. And that was a massive lesson for me. I went through several months of just like, I can't say loneliness. It's not like I didn't have friends, but like lonelierness. And it was hard. And I wanted to take the easy route. But I said to myself, things don't change if things don't change. So why don't I just clear the old of what I knew needed to be clear. And wait, oh my God, the people who have come into my life now, it's the connections that feel, that don't make you feel weird after you hang out, that don't make you feel uncomfortable, where you feel seen and heard and authentic, or I don't know the word for it right now, but Mercury retrogrades in Taurus, so I have a hard time like articulating during retrogrades, and I am a Taurus. But anyway, my point is, I guess when you signal to the universe or whatever you want to call it, what you want and what you deserve, with patience, it actually does come, and it came for me. And now I'm on the other side of like all of my shit. And I feel like no one can touch me either. So it's funny how you put that, because it really resonates.
We've always been, and we've said this too, like we've always been in like this very parallel journey of like, you know, going through the worst of it at the same times, or like very like close, in close proximity together. And I'm so happy to hear that. And it's so true about like, you do have the right to pursue connections that are going to give you the same thing back. And at this point, I mean, God, like I've started doing that in my personal relationships too. Like, you know, when it comes to like, I've started to date again. So I'm like, you know, I'm in this place where the bare minimum of anyone who wants to be in my life in that sense has to give that to me. That's not even, you know, negotiable for me. Whereas in the past, like even like maybe this time a year ago, I think I was starting to realize like, oh, I deserve better than like what I've been dealing with for the past 4 years. Like, but it's like, you know, I think when you really don't have a great clear view of your own self and your own soul, and you feel very like lost in those ways where you're like, I know who I am at my core and I know where I want to be, but right now I'm feeling all these things that I have to like get off of me. Like I was feeling so much like shame and like rejection from like this really long relationship that I was in, and like just feeling very like beaten down, like emotionally, mentally, spiritually from that. And when that ended, I was like, I just want to forget about this person. Like right now, I want to just find the person I'm supposed to be with. And that energy was also not right. You know, like I was like, okay, so the universe literally was like, Ellie, you're going to be alone for like a while. Yeah. And you're, yep. And then I got to a point where I was alone and I was like working and I was like, I don't even want to be with anyone right now. I just want to like be, I just want to have peace. Like the number one thing that I hadn't had in literally the 4 years that I was like, you know, coming out of this, like this really, I would say abusive situation in a lot of ways, was like I had no peace ever, and I wanted just to have my peace back, and that was like the bare minimum of what I could ask for. So I think like, yeah, that's, I totally am in that space as well, where I'm like, any friends or collaborators or anything that's in my life, like of course, like we can be cool. I mean, like you and I are just like people lovers, so of course we just like love people no matter what, and we accept them where they're at, and that I think that's great. But yeah, you know, when it comes to letting people into your inner life and inner circle, like you have to be protective of your own energy sometimes, and that's not,
there's a line.
Yeah, there's, and I think that's healthy to set a boundary and to have the expectation that like people close to you will either respect that boundary or, you know, they won't be close with you. So.
Yep. And when they don't respect the boundary, it's the trash taking itself out. I will say that forever. Mm-hmm. Because that's amazing. It's so garbage and it takes itself out. What more of a fucking high quality, like maintenance service could anyone want?
100.
So I will die on that hill. Anytime somebody doesn't respect like a need that you put up, you are being protected.
Yes.
I keep having flashbacks to when you and I first sat down at the Beanery. Is that what it was called?
The New York Beanery in Amityville.
The New York Beanery. Y'all. So back in 2019, when my life first caught on fire, and I feel like the fire just ended, I would say like maybe 4 or 5 months ago, I had to move back to Long Island, and I hit up Allie because you were also on the island, and we met up at a cafe, and I just was like, how do you do this? Like, how are you an artist while you're down here? Yada, yada. Like who you were sitting across from me in that time is so wildly different from who is sitting across from me virtually right now.
Yeah.
It's just, I like cannot fathom how much things have changed for the both of us. And then I would say a year later, I ended up launching my podcast. You came on, and I remember you were telling me like over the phone a week ago, how like you weren't in the best like time of your life in that time. And I wasn't either. That was like deep into the fire of my life. And I just feel so humbled of like where we're at now. It's insane. Like I'm pursuing film and my artistry, and so are you. And it's just like, I don't know.
Something that I too like really had to overcome was like, you know, the freaking place that I was and the people that I was really like relying on to like push me to that next level. Like I relied so heavily on like my ex-partner to like, he, you know, we were both artists and we're both like had so many talks about art. And like, I was like, this is the person that's going to push me to that next level. And yep. I was so committed to that idea. So then when it didn't work out, I was like, damn, I guess I'll never be a recording artist or a songwriter again. And I really, truly, honestly felt that in my soul. And I was like, that's fine. That's fine. I'll just be an actor. I'll write songs for me. And like, that'll be that. And I don't know, it sounds so silly, but because obviously there's so many people, but I was like, I don't have the finances to do this. I don't have the connections. I don't know who's good and who's bad. And I just like, don't have the general knowledge. And ironically, when that relationship came to a close, I started booking a lot of independent work as a musician, like randomly, really randomly. Like I played this one open mic and like the owner of the bar was like, hey, do you want to come back and like play for a few hours like during like our happy hour? And I was like, sure. So then I was doing that regularly. And then they were like, oh, like we're doing this event here. Do you want to be a part of that? I was like, sure. And then, you know, obviously playing a ton in Colorado, a ton. Like when I got back, I played like a gig at the Parkside Lounge in New York City. And I was like, really just like doing a lot of like music stuff and like writing a lot. And then I go to Arizona with no intentions. I didn't even bring my guitar. So I was playing a gig in New York City at the Parkside Lounge. And then, you know, I went to Arizona and I didn't even bring my guitar with me to Arizona. This is like the craziest thing. I didn't bring my guitar with me to Arizona at all because I was like, I'm doing this classic musical. I'm not going to be playing guitar. Like I'm going to be just doing here. I'm here to the end of February. This is more trouble than it's worth at this point. I'm going to bring it, have no time to play it and whatever. So I wound up not bringing it. Then the company was like, hey, can you stay on for the next show? And we want you to like play some guitar too stuff in the show. And I was like, oh, that's cool. I've never like played as part of like, I mean, I've played a lot of actor musician shows, but I've never played like as part of the band and the ensemble. Like it was kind of like, just like, I was like, that's really cool. So then they asked me to stay on. I wound up shipping my guitar to Arizona. It got shattered by UPS. Like so horribly. I can literally show you what it looked like. It was honestly the most devastating thing. And this sounds so dramatic. It was like the breakup, my dad dies, my guitar gets shattered. Like those were like, it was like the trifecta of like grief. And I literally cried so hard because I just was like, this guitar has been there through literally everything that I've gone through in this last year, this heartache, and I've poured my feelings. There's so much energy in this guitar. Every song that I've written in the last 5 years was written on that guitar. That was like my first like nice big, like I've had guitars growing up and stuff, but it was like, this is like a really nice Martin and I bought it myself and I was like bartending. So I like, you know, put so much care and time and energy only for it to get literally like, I don't know if you can see that, but like there's like that huge crack.
Oh my God.
And like it just was like the bottom of it like caved in.
Oh my God, it's literally shattered.
Yeah, don't ever ship an instrument via UPS. I thankfully, shout out to my company, they bought me another one that's the same exact one and replaced it because they were like, we forced you to send this here. So thank God, because I probably couldn't have afforded, I don't know why I can't. It's like you get on this thing.
Afforded.
Right? I couldn't have.
Yeah, afforded.
I couldn't have afforded to bought another one, to have gotten another one, get another one. Hi everyone, welcome to the podcast. No, it's so funny, you get on these things and you forget how to speak and you feel like, oh God, now I have a spotlight on me. But so my company replaced it, long story short, and then I met this person who wound up producing my song and is one of my good friends. So I was like, what the heck is going on? So yeah, you can't You can't make it up, and you have to just do the journey and be where you are, because it's just it all works itself out. That's what I've learned.
It really does. It really fucking does. And like, you can't teach that to someone like that. I think I view that as like enlightenment. It comes from within, where you realize you need to stop. Like, I don't know what the moment was for me, but I was like, I can't white knuckle anymore. I have to get out of my own way. But I don't think anybody could have taught me that, because my inherent is like to grab and squeeze and try to make it work, and for it to look this specific way, this specific this, yada yada, not realizing that when you're so hung up on one specific outcome, you close yourself off to literally everything else.
And I've learned too that it's always okay. Things always are okay. And you can argue that, like, people are like, well, Allie, like, your dad died, like, that's not okay. No, that sucks, but I'm okay. You know what I mean? And 100%. I believe that he's okay too. Yeah. Like, I feel like he is not suffering and he's at peace. And honestly, from what I've heard about the other side, seems like it's, you know, it's what we live for. Like, we exhaust ourselves, we feel these emotions, and hopefully to have peace someday. So that's the way I view it. And that's the way I have to view it in order to, really just be at peace with everything that happened. And I'm okay with that. And I believe that.
And grief really is the other side of like, how do I explain it? Love is like a coin. To experience that high feeling of love is one side, and then the other side is grief. Yeah. Like, that grief, it's the same coin, just a different side.
It's like,
and we try to avoid, but we can't.
You can't.
It's a part of it.
You have to feel it. You have to feel the big feelings, because that's the way, like, you know. And I think at the end of the day, like, some days I have a really hard time. Some days I for some reason, and there was no significance to this at all, the 7-month anniversary of my dad dying, that month was like the hardest month I went through.
What month was that?
This was January of this year.
Yeah. I feel like January, February is gross.
You know, it was right after the holidays. Anyway. I was like really expecting the holidays to be like unbearable. And Christmas was okay. Like, you know what I mean? It was like Christmas, my birthday. They were, let me be honest, they weren't anything earth shattering. Like, they were just normal days, right? Like, I didn't really feel this sense of like wanting to really celebrate, which I think is normal. And it just was like, I think we were all kind of walking on eggshells, because we're like, I don't want to be too happy because I'm really sad, but like, I don't want to be too sad because then this is going to be really depressing. So it was just this weird
fine line.
Yeah, just a weird energy all around. And I think people were like, I don't know how to act. Like, are you okay? Like, you know, and there was times where it was really hard, of course, like, that's natural. But I mean, the two hardest things that I feel like were the whole experience of this grief journey that I've been on were month 7. I don't know why. I think I just, like, it was after like the 6-month mark had passed. And I think this is also the first time I felt that same feeling that I was feeling around that same month was right after my dad's funeral. So like, we did the funeral. I saw, you know, everything was great. Like, I mean, not everything was great, but like, the funeral went as better than I could have imagined. Like, there was so much love, there was so much celebration, there was a lot of catharsis in that ceremony for me. But then, like, and like, the week that someone dies, like, everyone's around, everyone's calling you, people are sending food, people are sending condolences. And then after the services, it's just quiet.
It's empty.
And it's just like, well, now what? Because like, I still feel like I need all these things to be happening, but now nothing's happening. And I have to like eventually like integrate myself back into normal life. But I still have this like hole inside of me that's like not able to be filled. And I think there's something to be said about losing a parent. And maybe like the only comparative thing I can think is like losing a child, whereas like there's this pureness to that connection that like you can't really explain. Whereas like, I mean, obviously I've never lost a partner, so I can't speak to that. I can't speak to, but I have lost friends and grandparents and things like that. And there's like just, there was such a different feeling of losing my dad than any other feeling that I ever felt, because I felt like that was someone who I was personally connected to, like biologically, and just like emotionally. And that was the person who I always went to for all these things, for advice, for everything. And they're just gone. And I have no, there's no good reason why. And now I can't ever talk to them again. And it's like the weirdest feel. It was like the weirdest thing. And I was just like, well, now what do I do? Like, I don't even know how to grieve. And it's like your grieving journey really starts like right after all of that shit is over. Cause you're like, that's like what I think people don't talk about. People like, oh, how do I act like with the funeral? And it's like the funeral, the flowers and all that stuff. But it's like now, like the space is there. Like this is where it like really sets in. And I felt myself going through all the stages. Like I really went through this period of time too. And I think it was because my, like my breakup was so close to and so connected to my dad dying too. That I felt like, oh, men, they just leave you. And my therapist brought this up and I was like, wow, that is something I really had to like get over. Cause I was like, I had this like, well, you know, this person that I loved who said they would be there for me no matter what, like abandoned me at the time that I really, honestly, probably the only time that we were together and we weren't even together, but it was the only time I ever asked anything and ever asked him to be there for me. And there was just like straight up rejection there. And that was like my most vulnerable state, like the day my dad died. So I felt like, oh, well, these two people that were really important to me and like were male figures in my life have now ceased to exist. So I was so mad at every cis male in my life for a very long time. I was like, you guys just abandon us. Obviously, because I live for the gays. But like, you know, like I'm like, they've never let me down. But I was just like, there was this weird like, I was like, damn, like I feel so just like abandoned right now.
Yeah, it's, you went through a lot of initiations is what I call them, mm-hmm. like terrible shit that you have to go through to. Not saying like anyone's dad has to die or anything of that caliber, but like these are deep wounds that you're talking about, your abandonment wound, relationship with men, being able to decide on things for yourself, go to yourself for advice. They're huge, huge like pillars within the web of one's mind. So you went through basically all of them at once. And it was probably the most challenging thing of your entire life. I'm pretty intuitive. I could say I feel like that was kind of the worst of it for you. I'm not saying nothing bad is ever going to happen again, but I think this is like, as for you and as for me in 2022, I think like that kind of was the worst of it.
I can like, honestly see that being one of the worst. It was definitely the worst year I've ever had. I would be shocked if anything topped that.
Could top
of
that.
Course yeah. Like nobody knows that answer to that, and I feel like
life humbles you,
right? I feel this sense of like, okay, I have earned my good karma for a while. Like,
yes.
And
and your strength,
and you know, it's funny, someone asked me recently, they were like, what's your favorite quality about yourself? And like I was like, I'm resilient. And I know that like no matter how many times, because you know, last time we had a very episode focused on like my Crohn's and the kind of like how I dealt and navigated that. And like, you know, that was a great, horrible pain in my life for a long time that caused a lot of trauma. But, you know, I feel so on the other side of that in a lot of ways. And of course, there's always like some things that are like triggers. But for this, I'm like, you know, I know that like my experience with both of these scenarios will really help people. And that's, I think, what I'm called to do as an artist is like really offer my experience in the form of art and, you know, help others who are going through this same thing realize that they can do it, because we all have this strength and resilience inside of us, but we just have to dig deep and pull it out sometimes, even and act upon it when you don't believe it, because eventually one day you will believe it about yourself. Because I didn't. Yes. I was like, I know people keep saying I'm really strong, but I don't feel strong right now.
Yep.
But
now, and there's a different bliss when you are on the other side and you see clearly and you finally believe it. Because people have said that to me too all the time. You're so strong. You're so strong. You carry it well. You carry it well. And it literally meant fucking nothing to me. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, I finally saw it. And then all the times that it meant nothing to me came back, and it meant the world to me. Yeah. And it was like fucking like a filing cabinet I was opening. And I was finally able to like read all of it and have it land. And I was like, wow, I'm actually strong as shit. Like, I don't know a lot of people who can move alone across the country and without a job or an apartment and find a way to make it work, especially in a city so difficult like LA, like New York City. These are big things, yes. You know, but, I'm in like the blissful era now where I'm seeing more clearly, and it just, it feels so good. And it's nice to see it in you as well, because it's special. It takes hard work. It takes being humbled. It takes a lot. Yeah. And like, just to be on the other side of it and to know the art that's going to come of it. Yeah. I'm really, really, I'm excited. I'm excited for once in a long time.
Yeah.
I'm like fucking excited.
I honestly feel so much stronger having gone through it. And I honestly can stand up and like look in the mirror every day and say that I love who I am and who I've become. And like the person that this year has shaped me into is like definitely who I was mm-hmm. meant to be. And I am really like looking forward to towards the future. I'm looking forward to connecting with people who, have heard and been along this journey for like as long as I have, and like, you know, having the witnesses be like, wow, if Allie can do it, like I can totally do it too.
For sure.
And like, that's, you know, I want to inspire, I want to educate, and I want to like just put out like really meaningful things that other people can take with them on their journey too.
Yes, you will and you are. Allie, where can we find you if anybody wants to reach out and connect?
Oh my gosh. You can totally connect with me on Instagram. That's probably the one that I think everyone's, you know, most connected on now, ironically. at Allie Tams, AlLieTamBz, as in zebra. And very soon you can look for me on streaming services.
Yes,
sometime this summer.
Great. Thank you so much for coming on.
Oh my god, thanks for having me again. You're amazing.
Anytime. You're a recurring guest, and this won't be the last time.
See you guys soon then.
Yeah.
And that's a wrap on today's episode. Thank you for tuning in. Please share, subscribe, give us a 5-star rating if you gained anything at all from today's podcast, and we look forward to having you back next time.